Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
G'day guys, welcome to another episode. Before we get too far into it, could you please like, subscribe, share, comment, literally anything that you can do. It'll help out a lot. Thank you. Another episode begins. Today we're here with George Dibb from Creditor Watch.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Good to be here. Yeah,
now a little bit different than our regular sort of programming where we deal with the civil construction sort of side of it or haulage. Today we're dealing with a bit of finance. Yeah. Tell us what you do.
Oh, well, what do we do? What I do in a nutshell, effectively, I work with businesses to make sure, one, that you're getting paid your invoices on time. We do that in three ways. Do that by doing the upfront credit checks to make sure that before you agree to extending credit with a customer, or let's say in your case, dealing with a builder, you can see their credit worthiness up front, see how fast they're paying their other suppliers, for example, ATO debts, et cetera, et cetera. We then monitor them. So as the work is outstanding, you monitor them. We'll send you out alerts if, you know, any adverse events have happened. And of course, the third part of the credit risk process is collections. We can go back up to 4 years and try to collect those debts as well. So in a nutshell, that's what we do, and keeps us busy every day.
And what do you do there?
What do I do? I'm in charge. I'm a business development manager, so I go around to companies like yourself, sell you the software, but I also do the training and account management. So actually, I'm very hands on with the process.
Well, you must be, because you've reached out to be on a podcast, which I think is real intelligent and smart for not only getting your name out there, but also getting a conversation happening around your guys' platform, because it's not really, just a business that you take part in. Like, it's a full platform to use where, you know, you start to slowly filter your trade insurance, let's say trade insurance is a different thing. Mm. However, all of your finance now has to start filtering through Creditor Watch. Like, it's not just hey, are these guys any good? Like, what are they called? Equifax.
So they're all commercial credit bureaus, but those are credit checks in a point of time. So that's the difference between what we do and the traditional is we've taken what effectively was a point of time credit check.
Yes.
Ours are more live. We keep the finger on the pulse and do them, every 24 hours, for example.
Yep.
That's the difference.
And then you do send out alerts like, oh, this guy's not paying.
Correct.
Because I think you've gotten to a point where there's been enough uptake of your product that then when you have a spread over the industry, that now all of a sudden if you're a builder, let's say, but it's more than builders, but if you're a builder and your concrete is on Creditor Watch, your excavation bloke, your plasterer, your landscaper and your tiler, well, fuck, you better be paying that, concreter, because by the time it gets to landscape, the concrete is actually put forward and noticed to you guys or reported back to you guys that he hasn't been paid from this builder. And then, you send the notice to the landscaper saying, oh, hello,
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. We'll send then the landscaper the notice, and then the landscaper, it's about giving the landscaper in this case, for example, the power or the ability to either, for example, stop the work immediately until his money gets released, or for example, to go down the collections route and send letters of demand, reminder notices, just pretty much start applying the pressure on the builder to get paid. And
as long as they have money.
Look, at the end of the day, everybody's got money somewhere, but it's about becoming their priority, if that makes sense.
Well, I've said to a few people in the past, especially when I was much smaller, you know, like much smaller, I used to say to them, like, listen, I know you might not have money, but I don't care if you've got to borrow it from your mum or your auntie or whatever. Yep. Like, at the end of the day, if you get paid, right, and you make a profit, that's great. I'm not part of that process. The process of someone doing a good job, getting paid, and therefore making money or not making money, that's almost irregardless to me. 100%. What I have done is I've contracted a scope of works to you for a certain amount of money, and whether you're making, whether you're breaking even, whether you go shit, whether your business is up, whether your business is down, doesn't really matter. So if you need to borrow the money from your mum, call your mum, break open the piggy bank and give me my money. Or it's a different conversation, which I have now a little bit more, which is if you need me, because my scope of works is so large, to be part of the profit and loss on this project, well, then it needs to flow down to my payments. And I get a percentage, or if I am now part of this process of, you know, profitability of the job, you know, why should my fee be set when your profitability goes up and down? But then all of a sudden the conversation changes real quick, because they don't ever want to tie in a trade to, you know, if the building makes money.
Of course.
Yeah, well, why would you? You know, they want to get all the uplift. They want to get, you know, or factor in the holding, all of that bullshit. They definitely don't want to be given some away of the profit to the excavation bloke.
That's true. And it, you know what, that's actually something, it's a problem in the economy, in the larger economy, is everybody wants you to participate in their pain, but no one wants to participate, you know, no one wants to share their fruits. You know,
hey, everyone listen, wants to, if I'm in it for the sweets, yeah, I'm in it for the sours, I'm both.
100%. And that's been my personality since I was a kid. You have to be, if you want the sweets, the fruits of this life, well, you need to dig. I mean, taking the pun, I mean, that's what you're going to do. But that's how it is. And everybody wants you to be there in the trenches with them, but then if they make some money, they disappear.
They don't even know you anymore.
100%. And then it's even funnier. And if they lose the money, you end up becoming their psychologist or their counselor. I mean, look, have you ever been on the phone with, let's say, someone that owes you money? Doesn't he give you his whole life story? Don't you get in the whole emotional spiel and blah, blah, blah?
But we've been owed enough money over the time now where, like, not being harsh and trying to still be empathetic and everything else.
Of course.
Pay me.
And then how do you apply pressure? What are your tactics? What's your go-to? Let's say I'm a builder. I took you out for you do massive jobs, so it's not like a little townhouse, but let's say a massive job. Who do you go to? Because you're dealing with companies with many layers. Or do you go straight to the director and apply pressure?
Oh, I got a full finance team here, which, you know, we actually use the creditor watch service, which we think is very good. Part of the reason why I accepted you coming on, or, you know, when you reached out, by the way, I haven't not accepted one person yet. So, you know, I don't want to make it sound like someone's sitting there going, shit, I was going to reach out, but now I'm not. So first off, you know, the finance does their thing. The reminders, the letters of demand, the creditor watch defaults, you know, and all of that sort of stuff. The mechanism of actually commercial defaults through the magistrate's court can be quite good because of, you know, the flow-on effect of an application for wind-up can be gone to after that. So that is a fairly well-tested path of debt collection. And I say to people, you know, like, I've got some friends who are a little bit soft, you know, who you're telling, you get, you know, your life story placed in front of you, my kid's sick, my dog needs a hip replacement, and, you know, or the one that you hear the most often, I haven't been paid. Well, first and foremost, under the law, you're trading insolvent. If you need to be paid to pay me, you're trading insolvent. Now, we've already slightly touched on the fact that there's no sweets and sours.
And also, you're not a bank. You didn't engage when you engaged with on that project. You didn't agree to be their short-term line of credit.
Well, are you sure about that? Because somehow, some way, the industry has turned to be short-term lines of credit. I have to pay my employees weekly. I have to sign pieces of paper that says subcontractors and suppliers are paid before I get paid. Sometimes I have to sign a statutory declaration which says that they have all been paid before I get my money. So aren't I a bank at some point?
Well, technically you're not supposed to be, but you are doing, you're taking on the responsibility of one.
I think that's that I think that everyone, sorry for talking over to you as well, it's something that I'm learning as we go. I think that everyone listening here, whether you're a concrete, a landscape, tiler, plumber, fucking excavation bloke, or you work in building, knows that they rely on the subcontractor to finance and bankroll to a certain point. Some builders are great. Some builders are absolutely brilliant. Others are really shit, and they rely on the subby to bankroll the job.
And but here's where the problem starts creeping up, is the subby that's desperate for work. How many of those builders pay great? Let's say 70%. Let's give the benefit of a doubt. Let's say a majority pay fantastic, 70%. But who's going to be taking the work of the 30%, even if they know, you know, from word of mouth, or let's say the subby's using Creditor Watch, and he knows, oh, that builder's a slow payer, but he hasn't had a job in months. He's got to keep the business moving. He'll take the risk and he'll take on that work, and that's where it comes down to. It's about there's still subbies willing to take on or wear that risk because of the current situation, because there's not enough work, you could say, for absolutely everybody. Would you agree with that, or... is that, or why would the subby take on the risk? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, first off, business is risk, the whole thing. So subby's taking on risk, business is taking on risk. That is their job. That is what they do. Yeah. So whether you're taking on the risk for weather, whether you're taking on the risk of job scope, or whether you're taking on the risk of payments, at some point or another, like you're picking which risk you're willing to take. Now, you receive pressure from the outside, which is what you're talking about. You ain't got a lot of work. The work for the good 70%. The work for the good 70% is tied up. And then you've got dickhead builder, who everyone knows pays shit, who's got a creamy job. Well, first and foremost, he might not pay me shit. Second off, maybe we gamble a bit. But let me tell you, there's actually a real good job on at the moment. Real good. Probably quite a few $100,000. Closer to $1 million than not. And the builder is well known to be the shittest payer on the face of the planet. I reckon that if I put a poll up, that this name would pop up more than most in terms of shittest payer. Is he going to find someone to do it? Fuck yeah, he is. It's $1 million gig. If you make 15%, you know, it might be okay. He's a terrible pay. You have your payment conditions signed up and stuff like that. Now, I've never worked for the builder. Never. Not once have we worked for them. But even me, I'm like, oh, wow. Daddy,
yes.
$1 million job. Ooh, maybe they'll pay me. I'll be on the top of them. Now I've pulled back from the ledge there. I'm not going on the job. You know, there's in this market. There's too much. Oh, we should talk about the market. We'll come back to that. In this market, there's too much risk currently. You know, what is it, 4,000 small builders or 4,000 construction companies or something that gone broke in the last 5 years or some shit?
Yeah, don't quote me on the exact number, but it is...
thousands.
Yeah. Very big number. I'm not saying it because I don't want to get quoted on a...
Yeah. Everyone in your office will be like, yeah, good one, George.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Okay, let's talk market. Let's talk, let's get into it. Industry, what do you think?
In the construction space?
Yeah.
Well, funny enough, I'll ask you a question. Which industry do you think has the highest rate of insolvencies at the moment?
Construction.
Hospitality.
Bullshit.
I swear to you. Now, it's not by much. It's a small margin, but it's actually, everyone thinks construction. Actually, it's hospitality.
There's some restaurant owner looking at me at the moment going, you arrogant prick, thinking you've got it hard.
But look, it doesn't mean hospitality. But construction by no means is a, you know, rose petals and stuff. It is still the industry with the highest risk right after hospitality. Look, like you said, everyone, construction at the moment is being propped up by all these subbies effectively taking on being little banks, little lines of finance. But that's where the problem lies in construction, or a lot of it, is just the flow of cash. And I'll give an example. So, for example, I'm building a house here around, not far from here, actually. The cyber concrete got poured. A builder invoiced me. I sent it over to the bank to, of course, release the, what do they call it?
Like a progress payment.
Progress payment. Took the bank 5 weeks because of, oh, we need a document here. Oh, the person in charge is away on leave. Oh, they're sick. Now, all those excuses coming down from the bank pushes it out a week, another week, another week. Well, the concrete's already in the ground, so someone's already paid for it. Mm. Someone's already delivered it. The sand's already been used. The metal, I don't know what they're called exactly. The
Rio.
Is already there. The excavators have already gone and dug up the dirt.
Yeah, he's not getting paid. That excavation bloke, he needs some money.
But no one's got him paid for the job. So now it's up to the builder, of course, to pay all these subbies, which I'm sure they didn't pay him before they got their payment from the bank. But the builder didn't get his money from the bank for another 5 weeks.
So you thinking it's bank? It's finance driven, like this slowdown? Or do you think that I've had some interesting discussions around beige tape. It's not red tape, beige tape. It's this document that you have to fill out that causes another week delay. I did a subdivision. It took me almost 2 years to get power.
Mm.
Two. Now, mind you, I'm not the smartest bloke in subdivision space. I dig really good holes. I don't know fuck all about subdivision. However, I'll take it on. I'll have a look. So some of the things we did weren't the most correct. Some of the things we missed out, and so it made the process be longer. But we didn't make it 2 years.
Yeah.
We made a 1 year, like let's say it's a 1 year process to get the consent and then get it. Like we sent back this thing and they go, you filled out all of your paperwork, we'll get a booking done. Yeah, great. 6 months for them to go pull the fucking cable. And you go, well, what? Six months? I know that the guys for the water authorities are very much the same, and then you have councils, like the councils a big problem, and we're just not incentivized at a government compliance level to be efficient. It's actually the incentive is to be slower and to create a more cumbersome process. From my mind, of course, not blaming any town planners that might be listening, but from that, let's talk data and let's talk, what you see. Yeah, has there been an increase in accounts receivable in the industry?
Definitely. So, look, as of June, it's funny. So the past year, the number of payment defaults, especially in your sector, has been on the rise. As of last month, it actually held steady, but held steady at the high number.
Has that increased all the way up and now it's held steady?
Correct.
How do you measure that? How do you track that?
We track that by our members. So we have 55,000 members, sort of like what you were saying before. The more people that we have on board using Creditor Watch, the better and more insightful our data becomes. So we've gotten to the point with 55,000. We have our data is.
Yeah, you'd think really, your data's shit on. Yep.
Yeah, 100%. We'd hope that it's good. But we can see from the payment defaults, for example, that those are our members defaulting, let's say, for example, the builder. Now, that's our own unique data. Then we have the ATO tax data, so whoever's got a tax debt with the ATO, for instance, court actions, etc. There's many indicators, but the indicator that we're talking about now with the defaults, that has been rising over the past year, but it has leveled off as of recently, but at this high number. Which, what does that tell us, though? What's that mean? Like, for example, you go into a credit file of a builder, you see a few payment defaults, you scroll down, he's not paying his subby. So there's a holdup of the liquidity. And that means, for example, in those books, or whoever's dealing with them, more than likely you can make an assumption their accounts receivables is going up. So that's not cash in the bank, that's just your receivables line going up. And as we know, that doesn't make you money.
No.
That's...
does the opposite.
Exactly.
Does the opposite. There's a flow down effect at a ground level too that says the builders who don't pay get charged more. There's a risk profile there that the risk goes up. And like I said before, the price of business or what business is taking on risk. For that risk, you make a certain amount of money. If the risk is greater, you want to make more money.
But that's why, so when you were saying, so have we become like, or subcontractors become like a bank? Well, they need to maybe start thinking a little bit in that sense. So when anyone goes to a bank, the percentage you get for your credit, for example, what percentage your credit card will be or home loan, is based on your risk profile.
Mm.
So it's not about looking at a credit report and, this builder's got four deep. Now, that is signs of risks and sign that, perhaps they're not the most solvent. But are you willing, like you said, business is risk. Well, if that job, normally you're going to quote up 100, well, why don't you quote it? If you can't find anyone else, quote him up 180. Put the premium. Ah,
come on, you'll drag it down. Can't be 80 because that's 80% markup. Charge him an extra 10%. We're a bank. An extra 10% is 110.
As you wish. 10% and maybe less favorable payment terms if you normally give out 60 days up front. Well, and this is why I always say credit. Your credit process, it's an art, it's not a science. There is no, if there was a science to it, like 1 + 1 = 2, well, then there wouldn't be debt collectors, there wouldn't be insolvency lawyers, there wouldn't be credit bureaus, there'll just be a formula. There isn't a single formula, it's a combination of many factors. And in this case, it's about, well, we're in business, we're gonna, take on that risk. I need 30% paid up front. Instead of my normal 60-day terms, 30-day terms, plus get a personal guarantee. Get the director to sign a personal guarantee on the job. For example, or you're an excavator, go dig up for concrete. I'm joking.
That doesn't ever work anymore.
That's just a joke. In the office
laughing. What do you think then? Because the other part about it is, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, right? So we have these payment defaults increasing.
Yep.
Up until July and then holding steady, you said. But then you said that part of those payment defaults is the tax office. And the tax office currently in the last year has waged a war on outstanding debts. Is probably a dramatic way to put it, but I'd like anyone to describe it in a different way. One of the main mechanisms that they have changed is the fact that now interest is not a tax deductible item. That came in on July 1st. So if you've got interest that you're paying, you're now going to, and like I said, I'm often wrong. Please tell me I'm wrong later, but interest is not tax deductible no more, which means it has to come out of your profit. But profit is taxed at a 40 cents per dollar tax rate, 47, 9, whatever, 42, 44. So now you're paying 50% in real terms extra on your taxed interest. Have you noticed something about the tax office in the last 12 months going up?
What I'll say about the tax office is one thing. So when I was an accountant, 8-9 years ago, I'm getting a bit old now. One of my favorite things, and half the reason why I'm not an accountant anymore is you know, I'm a people's person. I can't sit behind a computer for 10 hours. Sorry, I'm not going off a tangent, but
we're going to loop it back.
We're looping back. I promise you, we're looping back.
All right, give it to me.
So my favorite thing to do in the world was to actually call up the ATO and negotiate these tax debts on behalf of my clients. Now, the problem that I see time and time again with the tax debts, and yes, the interest charges aren't tax deductible, but the client's not very proactive, and by no means I'm not defending the ATO here. They're merely a government body that enforces what the politicians decide. You know, so I'm not talking negative or positive. It's about you need to negotiate the ATO. You can negotiate your terms with them, but you need to actually call up, or your accountant needs to call up, and you need to negotiate. So, for example, you've incurred interest on the unpaid BASs going back years. Come to a payment agreement with them. That's effectively what the ATO is doing with those interest charges. Is just trying to bring you.
Have you heard that they're being more or less receptive to payment negotiations? Because from my hearings, I don't know if hearings is a word, whatever. Hearings might be a word. From what I've heard, that's definitely a word. From what I've heard. Yeah,
birds are chirping.
Yeah. There was a little bird that flew past this office before that said ATO. However, what I've heard is that they are less agreeable to interest charges being on payment plans, and that they want you to remit, you know, 90-95% of the interest, and that they're much more willing to force into SBRs, they're much more willing to force into wind-up applications. Like, it was something like during COVID, the ATO for 1 year did not place one company into administration.
Look, during COVID, I mean, but you've touched on a whole nother topic here, Jimmy.
Yeah, COVID's fucked us.
100%. And we still have, and this is the biggest problem, we have so many of these zombie enterprises. I know there's a proper word, but I call them zombie enterprises. They were propped up just from the government bailouts. So they're effectively just shell companies that were collecting, you know, or staying afloat purely from these grants.
Or GST, you know, like they haven't ran properly for a number of years.
And now they're starting to get wound up. Now we're starting to see them fall over one after the other. But that's a big problem, is we do have a lot of those zombie enterprises just out there at the moment. And I think, now again, I'm not trying to speculate what ATO thing. I think they're trying to wind, you know, like you said, they didn't wind up anyone in that whole period. Now they're trying to go around.
It was 12 or 18 months that they didn't wind up anyone.
But I would say, when people say things like the ATO is not willing, et cetera, a lot of the time, I've never heard anybody though say that anything bad about their accountant. No one ever puts the responsibility, no one ever questions, well, did my accountant, when he calls the ATO, is he actually negotiating for me, or is he just talking to the first person that picks up and hopes for the best? Everyone always, and I'm not defending the ATO,
I got a big part about this too. Yeah,
everyone goes, and this is the biggest thing, actually one of the things that drives me nuts the most, you know, talking, yeah, well, my accountant told me that, you know, they should be paying us soon. Not the ATO, now I'm talking about, you know, let's say you got your accountant to help you call up on some of your receivables. She'll be paying us soon. No, it'll be fine. We don't need anyone. It's like everyone just assumes, and that's why, you know, before, oh, what should we call you? I don't care about titles, because titles don't mean anything. It's the labor. The work is what's important to me. If I can add value, people want to know my title. If I can't add value, well, call me doctor. No one cares. No one ever looks at their account. No one goes accountant shopping anymore. No one questions, oh, you have eight. When the accountant calls anyone up, oh, the ATO, yeah, they're not going to relieve you of any of the interest charges. Just pay it. I've never heard anyone go, no, you're going to call the ATO again and negotiate. Sit and watch your accountant. See how they negotiate, whether they're up to par. They might be good in Excel, but when it comes to negotiating...
I have this conversation with one of my friends a lot. Who's your accountant work for? Everyone will say he works for you, like he's in his customer or himself. He's got a license he's protecting with his life.
Correct.
He's gone through where they taught him the tax code and every single thing that he had to pay to achieve the outcome of charging a rate while keeping his license.
Correct.
So when people say, oh, I've got a great accountant, what's a great accountant? What's a great accountant? You have, like, the great accountants, you know, the top four who end up stopping being accountants and start being business advisors, get fines all of the time and get investigated all of the time for underpaying tax. The big companies around the world do not pay tax. They pay business advisors who take on liability and to make sure that they twist and they turn and they get around it. And then the accountant who's down at the local shops, who his entire business or their entire business relies on keeping that license number so that they can lodge your taxation, will not bend the rules and, you know, in a way, I'm not even saying break the rules. I'm saying take a different perspective of those rules to minimise your taxation. They don't want to fight with the tax office.
Of course not. And at the end of the day, like you said, their concern is, one, keeping their licence, but also number two, are you going to pay, if let's say your accountant is, you know, accountant of Melbourne, are you going to be happy when he gives you an extra $2,000 bill and he managed to wipe off $100,000 in interest? No, you're still going to wince to him.
No.
I mean, most others.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
And number two, your accountant at the end of the day, it's just like yourself. The only person that cares about Starbucks Group the most is you. No one else. I think that as the companies ramp up,
that you get key employees that start to care as much as me. And if I sat here, and I hear about it often, but if I sat here and said that I didn't have them, that if I didn't have those employees that live, breathe, eat and shit Starbucks as much as I do, it'd be rude to them and the work that they've put in at their jobs and what they've done here. As the company builds, there is no doubt for the first decade that there was not a person who loved Starbucks as much as I did. Yep. Now I'd say that a lot of people do, and a lot of people love it more than me, you know, and that's what building a bigger company is, you know. Like, it's not, you know, it's not just one person anymore. It's a community of people, you know, that are building it, because I can only do so much work. Fuck, we're sitting here on a Tuesday morning doing a podcast. We got holes to dig and dirt to truck. If I didn't have people I fully trusted that were 100% invested to run this thing, well, me and you couldn't be here.
Well, that's a fresh perspective.
Yeah, not bad, that one.
No, it's not bad at all.
Why I think people stay with me and everything else like that, because that comes with – there's appreciation there from me. There's hard work and dedication from them. There is going above and beyond from their end and from my end, you know, like employment boss, I don't know, like titles. They don't mean shit, but employment or boss or whichever end of the spectrum you're on, if you're in it together – and you feel like you're supported both from my end and from their end. Well, that's how you build, because they're not leaving. They're not leaving. They're staying. You start sliding in more and more employees into that feel the same, that act the same, that work the same, and now all of a sudden you're a powerhouse, you know, and you're able to take on much, much bigger jobs than you should with the work that you got. You should be able to. You can take on much larger scopes, become more builders' banks. You know, as it goes around, it's just really hard to sit down. And I think that part of the challenge that I've gone through is, where do you learn about tax? Where do you learn about credit? Where do you learn about receivables and payables and all of that? Like, when you're sitting at home, you know, digging holes, and you know, you're sitting over the table from your wife, you know, trying to figure out how to get a guy to pay is hard. Maybe they listen to this podcast in the morning and realize that there is an actual dedicated agency platform that they can work on that helps them see if a builder's good.
Definitely. And more proactively as well. So we don't just sit back. Like I said, you do. We are account managers as well. It's not as if sign you up, away we go. Hands-on, we assess the individual, your needs, your circumstances, and then determine how we're going to, you know, put you in the best position moving forward.
I started working with Creditor Watch because I was going for trade credit insurance, and they said that my processes in terms of my payables or receivables or whatever the fuck it is, like they end up all going around in a big circle anyway. I pay people, they pay me.
100%. You know, it's receivables, payables, two sides of the same coin.
And you keep flicking it over.
Yeah.
And they said that my procedures, this is like 5-6 years ago, I don't know how long we've been with you guys, weren't robust enough to provide trade credit insurance.
Yep.
So we came to you guys and we actually found that a lot of our problems disappeared that we thought we needed trade credit insurance for because of the alerts and stuff. So you'll be sitting down on a Tuesday night and then all of a sudden you get pumped with 6 emails from you guys saying that the credit limit that we had was 150K. Because they've gone default with, I don't know, ABC company, their credit limit is now zero. And then that immediately prompts a conversation. Immediately.
Yeah. And that's how you end up becoming prioritized at the end of the day. Because if you're the first one to call that director, because he's going to be getting over the next few months 30, 40, 50, all the suppliers are going to be calling in to tighten credit terms. If you can be the first one, be their priority and on top of it, more likely than not, you'll be able to escape the Titanic, or that's how I call it. I always say it. It's about you want to be the first one off the ship. You don't want to be lingering last. And how do you do that? Information. Where's the information's everywhere. But I wanted to come back to one point you said. So how does one, you know, someone's digging holes all day, well, how are they meant to know about, you know, accounting? How are they meant to know about debt collection? How are they know? We live in an era, in a very unforgiving era. It's not like, you know, our grandparents' day where you could blindly go to your accountant. Yeah, he'll look after it. Your lawyer will look after it.
Bank managers, same.
Bank, exactly. You could. I still remember my grandfather, may he rest in peace, but, you know, when I was going to the bank to get a loan, he was surprised with how many forms I had to fill out because for him, he just went in. He was friends with a bank manager on a personal level. The manager told him yes, no, within a minute. He went and bought his house that same day. He was puzzled to see how the process. So maybe I like what you said before about the beige tape. It's not red tape per se, but it's just everything drags out longer. So now you have to be more proactive. So it's not, you can't get away with anymore, oh, I'm good at digging holes. Well, you won't be digging many holes if you're not getting paid, if you're taking on all this massive risk and none of them are paying you, or you can't have a team or a community like Starbucks that you're building with all your employees being more like a family and actually, you know, being part of a community. Well, the community won't last very long if the tax debts start building up. You can't pay your GST liabilities and you can't, you're not paying wages, salaries on time. Well, it's just like it's like a drought-stricken community. Well, eventually everyone will have to move to, you know, greener pastures.
I say to people like, because I used to, my very first podcast was with a friend of mine, Aaron Witt, and he said, what's the most important rules of excavation? And I said, get paid, get paid, get paid.
Yep.
I've done a really shit job and gotten paid. I've done the best job.
Not getting paid.
Not gotten paid. The guy has been the biggest asshole I've ever worked for in my life, and he paid me the minute I finished. The other guy, I pretty much wanted to invite to my house for Christmas lunch and fucking take pictures of him holding my kids. That's how much I liked him. The prick didn't pay. So all that ends up mattering is, did you get the money in your bank account?
100%. Not, oh, they were very pleasant to deal with. It's like, you know what, maybe you can start a new saying, you know, it's like nice guys finish last. Maybe sometimes it's the nice directors that pay you last. Who knows, that could be one of your catchphrases.
And I just think, like, the cash is the blood in the veins of a business.
In accounting, you know, your first rule in when you're studying accounting at uni, cash is king. Simple as that.
Cash is king.
Cash is king. The rest is, what's your receivables? I mean, you're probably, I'm not taking guesses, but on accrual-based accounting, if anything, when your receivables are that big, you're still paying GST on them. You're still paying your liabilities on them.
There's a pain in the ass. And you're paying all of the people to process the receivables that are like, and mind you, like we track sort of numbers and shit as well. So you can actually see the market. At some points, like, you know, we've gotten to the point where we're impacted so great by the market. The market interest rates go down, we can see that we get busier. You know, more approvals happen in certain areas. We can actually follow and track our workload and what we're doing, especially with the trucking. We can track that to certain areas of Melbourne that have, you know, an increased demand for dirt or dirt moving. You have certain pockets that all of a sudden, you know, they get released or changed to an industrial zone, and then all of, like, never had trucks there before. Now we have trucks there every fucking day. Then it moves on to a different area and that one's done because it's moved on. And we've been so, we've gotten to the point where we're actually impacted by the market so greatly we can track things. Well, that's the same with our accounts. You know, when wages go up through COVID but rates are going down, and then all of a sudden there was a real crunch around, you know, what you're talking about, you know, getting the payments from the banks, that builders' wages had to go up because all of a sudden they were paying so much more for labour and materials, but then getting huge delays in terms of, you know, windows and deliveries and all of that shit. And you can track that. You know who they go to the bank of a lot of the time? Bank of Subby, you know? Knock on the door, hey, I need an extended line of credit and I'm taking it.
What do you mean? They won't even ask. They'll just stop answering the phone, you know?
Yeah. They eventually answer again or, you know, they'll call you up for another job. But, yeah, so we can track that and watch that and see.
Actually, how do you deal with that? That's the one that always I find the funniest is – a subby is owed, let's say, 200 grand. I'm talking, you know, this is one of the blokes. One subby I've been dealing with is a concreter. Owed 200 grand by this builder. The builder had the nerve to actually call him for another job. It's like me.
All the time.
I told the subby, mate, are you serious?
Like, no, but all the time. And let's be honest, if you want to be paid, and I've gone through this on another podcast, if you want to be paid at the end of the day, don't move out of people's backyards. Just do backyard jobs. Nothing else. At the end of the day, if you want to get to the biggest jobs, you need the biggest payment terms, because the compliance behind paying you ends up being a huge process also. You know, it's not like you're given you don't even need to invoice the homeowner if you're working in backyards. They see it every morning while they have their coffee, and then they look out at the window every night while they have their dinner. They can see the work you've done. You're going to try and get money out of a building company that has 20,000 employees that's based in Singapore or some shit like that? How do you go through that process of their payables? Well, you have to put it in. It has to be signed off at a ground level. Then they have to go at a contracts level. Then they have to put it through to finance. Finance is offshore. So now that has to go through all of that time. And then eventually you're put into a payment run 3 weeks away because their payment runs are so fucking big that there's no chance that you can get like that.
All right. Those days are gone.
Unless you're in backyards. Because then you can go to your sock drawer and you can take out $2,000 and you can pay the guy.
I need to check my sock drawer.
If you have a sock drawer,
I got $2,000 in my sock drawer.
Break open your piggy bank. cards and phones. There's no more sock drawers. But, you know, that's part of the challenge. So once you get to a certain size, you are actually commercially obligated to continue to rock up even if you haven't been paid in your contracts.
Okay, so it's sort of like a silent expectation.
Not silent. It's written down. There are companies that have gone broke because they start getting charged. If you leave and you don't complete your scope of works, they start charging you liquidated damages. So you are incurring a damage cost because you haven't gone to site because you haven't been paid. Whoa, what the fuck is that?
And, you know, actually, now that you're at this point, and this is the biggest education piece, what we do day in, day out, is that's why you can't be scared to use the tools such as, for example, a payment default, letters of demand. Or even on those bigger companies, because at the end of the day, those, it's like a monopoly, duopolies, oligarchs. How they work is they effectively control the market. The market needs not to be scared to use the tools at your disposal. We live in...
They're okay with it. Most of all, they are okay with it. We send those things out like, you know, what's that movie where the guy's throwing, like, you know, the money off of the Wolf of Wall Street. You know,
when the investigators are on the boat.
They're okay. Throw the money, throw them out. Throw out the letters of demand. Throw out the payment reminders. Throw them out. Like, we have a process for it. If you haven't paid us 14 days overdue of your account, we send out a letter of demand. Don't like a letter of demand? Don't ring me up and crack the shits. Put the money in my account.
It's simple as that.
Oh.
It's funny how offended. I always love how offended. Oh, how could you send me that? It's how are you offended? You're the one that owes.
Just pay the fucking money. Pay the money. It's real easy. Pay the money. I'm real good at my job. We, like, don't get me wrong, we've screwed up some jobs in the past, but we did great holes, and we can supply both sides of the coin better than most, which is to dig the hole and truck the dirt away. It's all in-house.
I've actually always been curious. Where does that dirt actually go?
Well, that's the aim of the game, ain't it? You need to fill out your supply chain. The part of that supply chain is where you take that dirt, and we move mountains of dirt, like actual mountains.
Yeah, I saw one of those jobs you did. Saw on your LinkedIn a week ago. You had that one excavator on this massive mound of dirt. Where does that go? Where do you even get that much dirt? Like, how does it avoid?
Well, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg. I dig really big holes and I truck a lot of dirt, which means I can make big mounds, you know. But to make the big mounds, I have to be able to truck all the dirt to then, you know, dig all of the holes. It's this big, it's a circle economy. One feeds off of the other. So what that mound was is that there was an old quarry that got filled up. It got filled up pretty tall. Let's say it got filled up the height of a 7-8-story building. When it got filled up, there was actually a layer, because the water had nowhere really to go, it had a layer of jelly that got created. So the surface level is up here, and then there's a layer of jelly a few metres thick off of the floor of it, but so deep down that you can't get the water out of the fucking thing.
Okay.
How do you fix it?
Put a pipe and...
Well, you put all of these pipes, these special drains, there was about 1,000 of them over that area, because that was like a 2-acre hill, yeah? It was actually 10,000 square metres. It was 100 by 100.
Oh, okay. So it's...
huge. That was a huge...
Wait, so how did you get that shot? Do you have a drone?
There's drones and people like Louis, who's standing in the corner here, come out and film shit. But then, I think at the bottom it was 100 by 100 or 80 by 80. Whatever it was a decent hill. And then we drilled down so many drains, then stacked like 100,000 tonne of dirt on top. And it pressed so hard down on the jelly that it squeezed all of the water into the drains, and the drains came up, and then it spattered out the side. We had pipes like this shooting the water out. That's how much pressure there was from the ground. Interesting job. But you can only get that job if you can guarantee that you can bring enough dirt.
How did you guarantee?
Well, you sign on the contract like an idiot and say, yeah, we're good. And then you go to your sales team and you go, we need dirt real bad, guys. We're real bad. We need you to find dirt and bring it immediately to this location. But, we move hundreds and hundreds of truckloads a day. We might move on a busy day up to 1,000 loads in a day.
Okay, so it's just about diverting all those loads just to that site.
But then the rates don't work to divert it to the site either, yeah? Like, you can't, if you've priced a job to go from Melbourne to Adelaide just because you get someone who wants it in Brisbane, you can't divert it. That's bad business, because you'll lose money, because Brisbane's way further than Adelaide. So now you need to win the jobs in the area so that you can do that. Divert. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So that's why you're on the phone to the sales team. Like, you can start calling around that quarry.
Let's go. We've got a job to fill, and we need X amount per day to make money. But then they can go to the other people, and there's actually jobs that is the best location for them to take their dirt to. cheap transport rates, high levels of efficiencies, less trucks in the street in the morning, all of that stuff, less neighbourhood, you know, because we have a big problem of we send these trucks and they like come in like this. 20 of them that come at a time and then they piss off to the where they're dumping it and then they come back 20 of it at a time. You're better off to have three or four going all the time. It doesn't destroy the streets as much. You know, like the traffic isn't as bad. They're not trying to find spots to park. No one likes trucks parking in residential streets either or crack the shits, apart from that very small period of time that people are building the houses themselves and then they love it because that means progress.
And or in Western Sydney, haven't you? When you're driving in Western Sydney, don't you see everyone's got their tipper parked in their driveway? Yeah, did you notice?
Yeah, that does happen a lot. What's it called? The not in my backyard. Everyone wants, you know, access to cheap crush rock for their driveway if they're building a house.
Yep.
But they don't want the quarry anywhere near them. Nowhere near them. Well, I don't want it fucking anywhere near me. I want it 100 Ks away. But then if they're, you know, building a driveway and there's no concrete plants within 100 Ks, they go, oh, where's my cheap concrete? Someone who lives close to a concrete plant's getting their concrete for 180. Well, why am I paying 250? But that's all because of this not in my backyard sort of thing, which is where, you know, VCAT's full of people, you know, taking every development to you know, trial, let's say, because they don't want the apartment building next to them, but they do want it down the road and they do want their businesses that they're running to be busier and that they do want their schools to have more people in it and the hospital to get an expansion done and all of these things. However, just put the apartment building just a little bit further than, you know, just out of eyesight, please.
But doesn't that really tie back to what we were talking about in the beginning? Everybody wants the sweetness or everyone wants you to partake in the hard work, but no one wants to see the reward.
It's opposite way. Everyone wants you to have the sales. No one wants you to have the sweets.
Exactly. And it's the same concept here. They, for themselves, they want the benefits of the hospital expansion, more people in the schools, but they don't want the traffic of an ugly truck driving in and disturbing my morning
coffee.
I've only
got beautiful trucks, mate. Beautiful trucks is all I've got.
And the pink excavator. I really like that one.
I've got
Three of them?
I've got three pink excavators, two pink trucks.
Oh, nice. Okay, I haven't seen the pink trucks. Yeah, yeah. And I like all the four-wheel drives here as well. Actually, it's like a, for you who are watching, it's like a trail of breadcrumbs. Hansel and Gretel. That's how I found myself, you know, when driving it. It's like, oh, where is he? And it's like, oh, Here's a little crumb, and then the closer you get, that's it, we're here.
and I said it's quite early here that we're filming, but if you come when the afternoon shift has started, I've got like half a car park full of four-wheel drives and utes, and it's just pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Pain in the ass. But we're open in the office, actually on-site open from 6 until 6.
Oh, wow, so this office is 12 hours
minimum every day, if not more, if not 13 hours,
That's in – what are the same people you have?
No, we have split shifts and stuff like that so that we – in the morning when all – so let's take this morning for example. It's a nightmare. It rained last night. Receival facilities that are taking the dirt are closed.
Okay.
Generating sites – that are creating the dirt to then be trucked, they might be too wet. You know, we can't open up if the driveway's too wet and trucks are going to slide up and down it. Also might not want to take on the risk of the road or whatever else. And so they close. So then we have other problems of we have tips that are open that need X amount of loads per day, but yet their places that are generating the dirt are closed. And so now it's this big chessboard that you're trying to slide the pieces around to make the day work. So that happens at 5:30, let's say from 5:30. Yep. So this morning, someone came in early this morning, 5:30. Then as the bookings come through, we found that a lot of customers, you know, especially the smaller guys or the really big guys, not so much the middle, smaller guys are having to order their trucks when they get home, figure out what their jobs are doing, figure out what they need and blah, blah, blah. They might not get home till 5 o'clock, 5:30. So then they're ordering then, and we've got to flip around the jobs so that the trucks are available. And then the big people, they're open split shifts and stuff like that as well, or run a night shift, and then the night shift confirms the trucks for tomorrow. 6 o'clock bookings, 6 p.m. bookings. So, yeah, 12 to 13 hours it's open, unless we run a night shift, and then night shift, 24 hours. We run 24 hours.
So that's office. When you'll take one of a, let's say, a massive government job or whatever.
Yep.
Then you need 24 hours.
Yeah, we run 24 hours, operation. 7 days a week in the office. Yeah, yeah. And we've ran that. I think the longest we ran it was like 5 months, 4 or 5 months.
Okay, so if the employees here didn't like you or you like them or no one got along, there's no way you would have survived or they would have even.
Yeah, but also at the same time, you know, like you got to pay the right money, you know. Like,
oh, yeah, of course.
People will put up with a whole heap of shit, you know, if they're getting paid good cheddar. So, you know, like at the end of the day, it does come down to that as well, you know, like pay the right rate, you know, and you'll get the right people. But then you're 100% correct that even the right rate after a while tastes, you know, that turns to shit. There is a porn star who is hating going to work today. He's like, oh, he's waking up. He's complaining to his wife and he's like, I've got to go to work today. She's like, oh, my God, are you going to do porn again? And he's like, yeah, it's going to be fucking terrible. Just another day I have to do it. So if he hates it, I'm digging holes, I can hate it too when you're talking credit. Louis, you hate it sometimes? Hell yeah, he does. But it's about it. Do you have anything else you want to say? It was a quick hour, mate.
I honestly, it's felt like a five-minute chat. I mean, look, the only thing I'd like to say, if you don't mind me, Jimmy, is just if anyone wants to talk, and no pressure at all, but just see their current circumstances. Let's say you're a subby and you're struggling to get paid by your builders, or you just want to know what you can do in order to minimize your risk. Feel free to reach out to me and
I think it's a great service. I think it's a great service. There's different levels of how you use them, you know, a creditor watch. There's different levels. We've ranged in our levels over our time as our processes have gotten better and everything else like that. So it's really it's a good platform to be part of. And overall, you know, you're not even our BDM. You're not our guy who looks after us. We're just talking on the internet. But I think it's really good if anyone wants to do that. Thank you.
Read out my number. Could I?
Yeah, sure. You can read it out. And we can also put it in the comments or whatever.
Yes, sir. Give me a call on 0479-040181 or reach out to me on LinkedIn. And, yeah, happy to have that conversation and just, you know, get a better understanding of your needs and see if we can actually help you out at all.
George, thank you very much for coming. Anyone, please subscribe. If anyone wants to be on the podcast, please let me know. Pretty much ready to rock and roll. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Jimmy.